TV. 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 Okay, TV.
Hi.
Just being a good helper.
You are being...
Nope.
One pill.
Nope. 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 I was helping you do the right thing just then. Because you played that theme music on the phone, and you had your face too close to the mic. You were, mm-hmm. you were shouting. That was our second take.
Yeah.
Because I reached in heroically and made things good.
This is the second episode, actually, that we're taping this week, even though it's the first one that's airing.
It's the second episode we're taping in the same afternoon.
Yes. The first one...
You'll hear after this one.
It will go up in a couple of days.
Presumably. If you're like one of those people who hops on the episode the minute it comes out,
yeah,
regardless of where you are and what's happening, you know, you're that devoted to us.
Which we appreciate. Which
is great, but I don't know who that is.
We got people that do that.
You'll be hearing this one before you'll be hearing the movie one, even though we did the movie one first.
Anyway, the movie episode, we had guests and it was great, but Dave was actually absent for most of it because parking issues.
Things were a problem.
Back home in West Hollywood.
Problems were a problem.
And
we're in Atlanta right
yes,
now.
Yes, and his snit at the world continues. It's even not a snit. I've done
I'm not
nothing wrong
anywhere.
Here.
I'm not
yet
snitting at
I'm
anyone.
Absorbing the brunt
no,
of your negative
nope.
negativity.
Nope. Guess what? I'm all chill vibes and good times right now.
Yeah. Anyway, this
I'm
is
telling
a,
you, it's true.
This is
you're
a pod-
not going to hear one cross word out of me
right.
this episode.
Okay,
I had many cross words with West Hollywood City Hall okay. during the taping of Linoleum Knife, but as this is LKTV, and you're motioning for me to change my microphone position, but I cannot because we are sitting on an old timey grandma couch
yes,
and we are holding
you know
the microphone in our
hands. I could
hands.
Scoot the table forward or something.
Well, you could do that. Why don't you?
All right, fine. Because you're doing it all
you
wrong.
You just made everything great.
As per usual.
Thanks for making everything great.
Thank you. It's my
See
job.
See how chill vibes and good times I'm being right now?
So this is a podcast of the television.
Yes.
I'm Alonzo Duraldi. I'm the film reviews editor for The Wrap and film critic and TV recapper at What the Flick on the YouTube channel, The Young Turks Network.
I'm Mr. Chill Vibes and Good Times. That's my name.
Yeah.
Don't wear it out. My name of Mr. Chill Vibes and Good Times.
Not really your name. Also not really.
What's
anything.
My name? Say my name. Say my name.
You are Dave White, who is only freewheeling when that word is being used very ironically.
I didn't say freewheeling.
No,
when
I
When did
am.
I say freewheeling?
Constantly at a
Before,
some point.
No, today. When did I say
okay,
freewheeling?
I'm just saying.
Today I'm chill vibes and good times.
Chill vibes and good times. Also ironic. And in heavy quotation marks.
The problem with the car, you're going to hear so much about this car that's currently sitting on our block in West Hollywood.
So if you know...
The problem is fixed.
Okay,
We
yes,
fixed the
is.
Problem.
It is.
We FedExed the car keys...
To a friend.
To a friend who's going to help move the car before the big bad tow truck arrives. None of this is our fault.
One of the vagaries of Los Angeles parking is that on pretty much any
we don't
street,
have to tell them. They can
I thought
to,
you wanted to.
They can listen to Linoleum.
You're right. That's
Knife.
True. You're
if
right.
they want to know,
we'll have the full story on Linoleum Knife. And you should check out this
Why
week's.
Why should they listen to that twice?
You should check out this week's Linoleum Knife anyway, because joining us is my yeah. dear friend Kurt Holman,
yes.
who's been on the show before, and a first time guest, someone we're thrilled to have with us, Mr. Nathan Rabin,
a total stranger.
Yes, but who is nonetheless he has become a somebody that I know on Facebook and stuff, and now we yeah. know him in
that,
IRL.
Yes. Now we're IRL. Type bros.
Good time chill bros.
Say it right. Chill vibes, good times.
Chill vibes, good times.
Mister. That's Mr. Chill Vibes, good times.
Did you get that from Gary? This is like something Gary would say.
To you. No, I got that from my own chill vibe, good time brain.
I see. That's great.
You know what's going on inside my head.
Chill, yeah, I do know what's chill, going on inside your
chill
head.
Chill vibes and good times.
I know precisely what's going on in your head, which is why I find this whole chill vibes, good times thing to be hilarious. So
the problem's fixed.
We are traveling this week, and that
well,
has
we
kind
traveled.
Of, we traveled, and
now
we are
sitting
right, but we are out yeah. of we're away from home and our own TiVo this week, which has kind of cut into our TV watching. But we have managed to check out a few things for your delectation.
Nice word,
thank you. What should we start with Manimal?
Well, yeah, because I've been waiting and waiting and waiting. I've been waiting, anticipating Manimal.
For 32 years to talk yeah. about Manimal, since it was Manimal, introduced and canceled in 1983.
So Manimal was this show on NBC.
Yes.
In 1983. It was about a guy who was a Manimal.
Yes. I think they're going to need more details.
All right. So he's this criminal science professor with a really fancy British accent. You know how when someone wants to pretend that they're British and they do that Downton Abbey kind of talking?
What ho?
Yeah, that's this guy. I don't know where this actor was actually from. I mean, I know he's from England.
But he sounds fake English.
What's his last name? His name is
Simon McCorkindale.
Yeah, he died in 2010, actually.
Oh.
Fairly young. He died at like age 58. And for all we know, he was, you know, in real life, like one of those people on The Only Way is Essex. Like, you don't know.
Am I his mother?
but he sure does have the posh.
Oh yeah,
way of speaking.
He wears a lot of tuxedos on this show
with scarves.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, mind you, this is the kind of show. I guess in 1983, nobody bothered to think this thing sort of thing through, or they just didn't want to deal with it on network television.
They just didn't care.
You know. Well,
they didn't
okay.
care.
Hang on. This was 1983. Yeah. Now, in 1984, The Terminator came out.
Yes.
And if you'll recall, one of the big things in all of the Terminator movies yes. is that when you travel through time, you have to do it naked.
Right.
Because only organic matter can travel through time.
Yes.
And then later you, of course, have the Twilight movies where if you are a werewolf person
right.
and you werewolf out, yeah. Then the fact that you lose your pants, you have to have a spare pair
you
waiting
spare
for you when you unwerewolf.
Waiting for you in a hole that you've dug in the ground in the woods.
Right.
Yeah.
Manimal did not take such considerations into account.
No.
To the extent that you see the dude's suit rip when he converts into a Black Panther, and yet when he is no longer a Black Panther,
yes.
that suit is back on Simon McCorkindale, every stitch in place.
Are all Panthers black?
No. I think there's gray Panthers, and there's pink Panthers. And
there is a pink Panther. Yeah, you're
yeah.
right.
No, there's. I don't think Panthers are automatically black, but this way on this show he is. This is a show from the mind of one Glenn A. Larson, who, if you are a TV fan, you will know that name. Among his shows, I'm looking this at his Wikipedia page: Battlestar Galactica, the OG Battlestar Galactica,
uh-huh.
Buck Rogers in the 25th Century.
It's a great show.
Quincy.
Also a great show.
The Hardy Boys Nancy Drew Mysteries.
That was boring.
BJ and the Bear. The Fall.
Had a monkey.
The Fall Guy.
Not a good show.
Magnum P.I.
That show was good for a lot of reasons.
And Knight Rider.
Also a good show.
So he was kind of the king of a certain kind of hour-long...
dumbness.
Yeah, like his, right. like if Stephen J. Cannell shows were too intellectually challenging for you, right. Glenn A. Larson was there.
Yeah.
You know, obviously knew how to milk a concept, and a lot of these shows were very popular and lasted a very long time. Manimal was not one of those shows.
That is correct. Manimal went 8 episodes.
Yeah.
We don't know... if all 8 episodes even aired, we know that they made 8 episodes.
I got Wikipedia open. I'll all look. Right. But in the meantime, the premise is you have a man who is a Manimal.
And then it became a joke.
I think it was probably a joke the second it aired. But the show
it
itself.
It became a joke and stayed a joke.
Became a punchline.
For years and years, decades even. And now, The entire eight episode run is on DVD.
Yes, thank you. I think it's Shout Factory.
They sent it to us, and we were very happy that day. And then we put it in, and also we remained happy, even though it is rotten.
Apparently, yes, they did all eight did all right. air. Manimal was scheduled opposite CBS's popular soap opera Dallas and was canceled after eight episodes due to low ratings.
That's why.
Manimal was a part of NBC's 1983 fall lineup, which also featured eight other series that were canceled before their first seasons ended, including Jennifer Slept Here.
Never heard of it.
That was the one with Lonnie Anderson as a ghost.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay.
Bay City Blues. I remember that one. That was a gritty, sort of semi-gritty, hour-long comedy drama about a small-town minor league baseball team.
Okay.
And We Got It Made.
Remind me what that was.
The two doofus guys who get a sexy maid, basically. That was the show. And one of the actors who played that was the show.
All right.
One of the actors who played one of the doofusy guys, I think, was like one of the first sort of fairly famous people to die of AIDS, if memory serves. But dumb show. I don't remember his name. Manimal is not well regarded by most TV reviewers. John Jabna's book, The Best of Science Fiction TV, included Manimal in its list of the worst science fiction shows of all time, along with Space 1999, Lost in Space, Buck Rogers in the 25th Century, and The Star Lost. I don't know The Star Lost. TV Guide also ranked Manimal number 15 on their list of the 50 worst TV shows of all time in 2002. The Ultimate Encyclopedia of Fantasy described Manimal thus, axed after seven regular episodes, the only surprise being that it ever got past the pilot stage.
So, okay.
And at one point, Will Ferrell and Adam McKay were going to produce a live-action CGI film based on the series.
Nice. They should.
And according to... In July 2014, it was reported that they were going to do it. So it's awesome. Perhaps still happening.
It might still be happening.
Yeah.
So we
Please don't smoosh this so
what
much.
Am I not supposed to smoosh?
I don't want to bend the cable
I'm
there.
Holding this microphone. You can't have it both ways.
You can hold it up without flattening it on your tum-tum.
My what?
Your tum-tum.
My huh-huh? My what? Huh-huh? My hoo-hoo?
You'll get sick and ruin your tum-tum. Button up your overcoat.
Listen.
Get to bed by 3.
You can have the microphone.
Take good care of yourself. You belong to me.
You can have the microphone at the proper angle.
Uh-huh.
Or you can have the microphone close enough to me. This here tum-tum, which I have spent many decades building up to its robust state, is just going to be here. And it's going to get in the way of that mic.
Let me move everything closer to you. See if that makes a difference.
It makes no difference.
Yes, it does.
Can we please continue talking about Manimal?
I insist that we continue talking about Manimal.
All right. So he's in a taxi cab.
Yes.
We begin in mid-Manimal story.
Right. Already in progress.
Yeah. No explanations as to why he's here, what he's doing, or anything.
Mm-hmm.
But he's already transforming in the cab ride into... Cool thing, walking like a panther.
Now, mind you, this involves a lot of close-ups of his hand bubbling and turning into blue felt.
Into a really great fake panther paw.
And also face bubbling.
When he's not the Manimal, he's this blonde Frankenstein like John Tesh. And
he is TV handsome in the way that the Simon and Simon guys were.
Yes.
Sort of like JCPenney underwear model.
Yes. What you learn is that the moon power manimalizes him.
Is it the moon?
Yeah, something like that.
Okay.
And he's running around solving crimes by taking the form of the panther or a hawk or what's the other thing?
Kitty cat.
Oh, yeah, a cat. And then is he the snake at some point, too?
No, she thinks he's the snake, but he's not the snake.
That's right. So he has a crime-fighting partner, Melody
Anderson from the Flash Gordon movie. is one of his partners, as it turns out, or becomes his new partner. His current partner, well, we haven't gotten there yet. Go ahead.
She wears a lot of very cute pink preppy clothes, and she knows how to use a gun.
Mm-hmm.
And she's a tough cookie.
She's a lady cop.
Even though she's got like really perky blonde hair and is never getting the pleat in her trouser is never broken. She's never mussed.
She's rocking a lot of 80s red blazers, pink members only jackets.
Yeah.
At one point I pointed out her perm, to which my sister-in-law Susan said, "Double process." And this was bugging me. And
do you know what she does now?
Melody Anderson?
Yeah.
What?
She is a substance abuse counselor and speaker.
All right.
Yeah.
Good for her.
She dropped out of being an actress.
Well, I liked her in Flash Gordon. Mm. The guy who's driving the cab at the beginning, I thought he looked familiar. I just TiVo'd him.
Yeah.
I just IMDb'd him. He was in a 1982 exploitation film called The Beach Girls.
Okay.
He's also in Who's That Girl?
Oh, well then, that's why you know him.
Yeah. But because no, you're
such a big fan of Who's That Girl. I am,
but I remember even when I saw Who's That Girl, I was like, oh, that guy was in Beach Girls. Because I used to come on cable a lot.
So there are these guys, bad guys, with a nerve gas.
Yes.
And one of them is Bernie from Weekend at Bernie's.
Right. And one of them is the guy who marries Pia Zadora in The Lonely Lady and asks her if the garden hose is more your kick.
Right.
And one of them is Ursula Andress.
And one of them is Ursula Andress of Dr. No fame.
Mm-hmm.
At one point...
Okay, I moved all this closer so you wouldn't do the exact thing you're doing.
All right. So, sorry.
Thank you.
My tum-tum.
That's right.
It will not be tamed. You can't tame my tum-tum.
I know that.
Okay, what are we doing? Oh, okay.
Nerve gas.
So at one point... Okay, so there's the nerve gas, and they're fighting. They're chasing the bad guys, and then the manimal turns into a cat and sticks his head... Into
Ursula Andress's robe.
Ursula Andress's robe, because he's a naughty manimal.
Mm-hmm.
And then the bad guy who's Bernie from Weekend at Bernie's, he gets a prostitute. And before he can have her...
Glenn Turman, who is the manimal's original partner.
He throws a cobra into the bed with the guy. And we think it's the manimal, but it's not.
Yes, which the cop finds out when she grabs the snake thinking that it's the manimal, and then the manimal walks in, ha ha ha.
Yeah. And then there's more chasing and people running around and more manimal. What happens most of the time, here's how the bad guys are confronted by the manimal.
Oh, and a lot of blowing up.
Yeah. Here's how the bad guys are confronted by the manimal. They're about to commit some sort of act of violence with a gun. And then the manimal shows up,
mm-hmm.
and he's the panther. Mm-hmm. And everyone stops dead in their tracks and is like, oh, geez, it's the manimal. And then they fall over and become bumbling criminals.
Well, they don't know he's
as though this is that darn cat.
They don't know he's the manimal. Cat, they just know he's the scary jungle cat.
If that darn cat
was a panther,
that is what this show would turn into.
And then there's the part where he turns into a hawk and claws into the back of Hart Bachner, the Lonely Lady guy, so that he can get him to drop the camera that he's trying to steal from Melody Anderson.
So, and that's basically it. Every time the bad guys come around and try to nerve gas people, the manimal shows up and thwarts their plan.
Meanwhile, Melody Anderson somehow puts together these clues where she realizes that hawk was hanging around me and paying attention. Right. It must be the posh British guy.
Right. Like, this is not a problem for her to make
that connection. That's a logical leap that a cop's going to make.
Then she finds his journals in which he explains how and why he is the manimal.
Yes, that he and Glenn Turman were captured in Vietnam, you know.
And while they were in the Vietnam cage, the moon power... manimalized him.
Yes.
And he turned into
the Panther.
The Panther.
Oh, the best part is when they have the, like, sort of felt-covered styrofoam panther paw,
right,
and then the claws come shooting out of it.
Yes.
You missed the longest transformation. It lasted a good 2 minutes where you can see
the
whiskers growing out the side of his face.
I didn't want to make you rewind.
And the ears getting pointy.
I'm sure furry. That will be repeated.
In subsequent episodes.
Probably the same footage.
Yes.
So, I found Manimal to be completely entertaining.
I was riveted. It was fun to make fun of, but I never got bored with it.
I can't wait to watch the next episodes. I can't wait to watch the next episodes and learn more of his adventures.
All eight of them. Thank you, Shout Factory.
Furthermore, I want to see the developing romance that takes place between him and
Melody Anderson,
because he is trying to put it on her from the very beginning. He's supposed to be elegant and sophisticated.
It just comes off kind of creepy.
But he's actually a creeper.
Yeah.
He's fully gross.
He's supposed to be Remington Steele, but it's playing more like Dudley Moore in Foul Play.
Yeah. He's all about getting the ladies, and it doesn't matter to him if it's done by saying goofy, cheesy, sexy innuendo
right
to them. Yeah, it's rotten, and I'm very happy that we are going to recap every single episode.
And I think the 80s women's fashions alone will be enough to keep me
both. It's more than that. It's a combination of the fashions, the bad violence effects, the bad transformation animal effects, the terrible dialogue. The score is incredible.
Oh, yeah.
It's that Casio.
As I said while we were watching it, who needs an orchestra? I got one guy with a keyboard making all the sounds.
The music for Knight Rider feels like, you know.
Rachmaninoff?
Yeah. It's quite a package.
Yeah. Yeah. It's terrible, but in the best way. Much better, also from Shout Factory, actually, new on DVD, and perfect for this time of year, is the Glenn Campbell...
Especially now, because by the time y'all listen to this, Thanksgiving will probably be over.
Yeah. The Glenn Campbell Good Time Hour Christmas Special.
Can you pause it for a moment while I drag up my notes?
Of course. So these were basically the Christmas episodes of the Glenn Campbell Good Time Hour variety show from 1969 and 1970. This was a variety show that aired on CBS and was notable in being one of the quote-unquote rural shows that survived the Great Purge that took out the Beverly Hillbillies and Green Acres and Petticoat Junction. And Hee Haw and all of these shows that were really popular on the network, but that a new network executive president came in and said, all right, enough of this country crock. We're going to have urban shows about people in cities and none of this, you know, yeehaw, cotton picking, you know, sassafras time.
All right. Now, you're going to have to explain to young listeners
what all those shows were that I just mentioned.
What those shows were.
Okay, fine. Well, Hee Haw, as you may know, was a variety show that was hosted by...
Probably the most well-known of the bunch after the Beverly Hillbillies.
Yes. It was a variety show. It was hosted by country legends Buck Owens and Roy Clark. And it was basically, if you took Laugh-In, which was a very popular show of the late 60s that was relied on kind of vaudeville-style blackout humor and quick one-liners and jumping around from thing to thing to thing, but did it in a super kind of self-consciously cornpone kind of way.
Yes.
And had tons of country music people as long as like country comedians.
The equivalent of today would be Jeff Foxworthy, Larry the Cable Guy.
Yes.
That guy whose last name is White, and I can't remember his name.
The what was their tour? Oh, the Blue Collar
the
Comedy
Blue Collar guys. Comedy guys.
Yeah. So, and then Hee Haw, after getting canceled by CBS, had it still continued to have a very successful life in syndication. Where I always remember
my family watched Hee Haw every week.
I remember Hee Haw coming on in a time slot where there was literally nothing else on, so sometimes I would just sort of subject myself to it, but I was never a fan. Green Acres, very popular sitcom about a New York lawyer who drags his socialite wife out to the country where he wants to start a farm. The Beverly Hillbillies, you know that. You know that. Everybody knows the Beverly Hillbillies.
Yes.
And then Petticoat Junction was about the hotel with cute daughters that worked there.
Right.
They were known as, those three shows were known as the Hooterville Trilogy.
Yes.
They all revolved around generally the same geographic area of like the Ozarks or something. Storekeeper Sam Drucker was the unifying force between them.
Now, Glenn Campbell, however,
yes,
even though he was in this world
right,
and technically of it, he also had one foot in the groovy world of the counterculture.
He was a crossover country guy.
He really was. He was from Arkansas, but he moved to Los Angeles in like 1960, and he became a session musician. He was a very accomplished guitar player, even before I think they discovered that he was also a really great singer.
Hmm.
He became part of a group of session musicians in the 1960s known as the Wrecking Crew. There's an entire documentary
right
about the Wrecking Crew called The Wrecking Crew that you should see.
It just came out like this year, I think.
Yes. And so he was
a session player on the Pet Shop
on the Pet Shop Boys.
The Beach Boys Pet Sounds.
Yes. And so
all the words were in there, they were just in the wrong order.
And so he was in various bands and then got a recording contract and became a country-esque singer. Like, he had hits on country radio, but he was also had great crossover appeal. And he had hit songs on pop radio.
Yeah. He was an actor. He was in the original.
He was also an actor. He had a great sort of collaboration with Bobby Gentry and then with Jimmy Webb, the songwriter.
Yeah.
If you want to know one of the... What are you doing?
You're doing the thing I've been asking you not to do.
My tum-tum is
Your
in
tum-tum
the way.
Tum-tum is in the way.
What am I going to do with this?
Stop bending the cable.
How am I going to... I can't do it.
All you have to do is talk into this side of the mic and not bend the cable.
Listen, we're in a compromised physical position here on
okay,
this
soft why don't you do what? Why don't you do what I'm doing?
No.
And keep it in the stand and hold the stand.
What you're doing is dumb. Anyway, okay, so... where was I explaining
Jimmy
important
Webb.
Stuff to the audience?
Jimmy Webb.
Go get a record called Reunion. And that is an album that Glenn Campbell did with Jimmy Webb in like 1973, 74. It's incredible. Jimmy Webb wrote Wichita Lineman, I think, for Glenn Campbell.
And Galveston.
And Galveston. And those were like two of his biggest hits. Anyway, he had dreamy good looks, and Glenn Campbell. He had that like thick head of blonde hair and
the dry look.
Yeah. They couldn't get that man on TV fast enough because he was game to do pretty much anything with anybody.
Yeah. And he was, you know, affable.
And yet at the same time, at the same time,
on camera,
the
anyway.
Country audience did not reject him for this.
Mm-hmm.
They seemed to really still be into him.
Yeah,
I'm sure some of the hardcore purists were like, "Well, that boy ain't country," you know. But it didn't matter. He was their crossover. He was their foot into
the mainstream.
The mainstream. So, on this first Christmas themed episode, he begins the.
Episode
the show taped at Television City in Hollywood at the corner of Fairfax and Beverly with a pickin' and a grinnin' version of his big hit single Gentle on My Mind
right
accompanied by three banjo playing Santa Clauses who stand up in the audience jump up out of the audience with their banjos and begin accompanying him on that song. The minute this is over, he introduces a woman he describes as my favorite girl singer, Miss Cher. And together, he and Cher do the grooviest jingle bells that you have ever heard.
Jingle bells.
I can imagine a sort of cognitive dissonance taking place among the deep country audience. Being like, I don't like them Sonny and Cher hippies. And I don't like this groovy jingle bells.
They're not doing it this way on the Johnny Cash show.
No, they're not. But I still sure do like that Glenn Campbell. And so...
Well, and also, I mean, think about it. This was...
Then he taunts... Oh, keep going.
Well, I was gonna say your thing. Well, the counterculture, obviously, is in full roar at the moment.
Yeah.
So here's a guy who's got longish hair.
Longish
hair. Nice full head of hair.
It's still... It's not long, but it's longer than a conservative man would have had.
But nothing so outrageous that it wouldn't be palatable to grandma. And so there, right. I think there's something where you look at this guy and you at least think, okay, well, he's not, he doesn't look like he's shooting up heroin while burning his draft card.
Right.
You know, he has a very kind of American appeal to him. And so they would probably followed him into the, you know, the slightly dangerous areas of singing jingle bells with Cher, you know?
Yes. Then Mr. Campbell... Taunts.
You're doing it again.
Then
you're
Mr. Campbell. Crazy. Then Mr. Campbell taunts the audience further with an appearance by America's favorite fag, Paul Lynde, who shows up as Santa Claus
in a sketch with Andy Griffith.
Again, you can feel the audience going, "That guy." Oh, but I sure do love Andy.
But no, here's the thing, though.
Yeah,
people loved Paul Lynde.
Did they all love
They Paul all Lynde? Loved they Paul Lynde.
They all loved Paul
he
Lynde.
He was the unquestionable star of the Hollywood Squares.
Right.
They gave this guy TV specials. They gave this guy a series. America loved Paul Lynde because gay was so alien to the thought process
right.
of a thing that anybody would say out loud.
I don't know, my dad called Paul Lynde a fruit.
But A, he only wanted to get laughs from you, and
right.
B, there was nothing remotely sexual about him.
Correct.
I think America had no problem at all with Paul Lynde. He was the national, like, you know, jester eunuch for the gays.
Right. That's I agree with you, and I know that's a fact, but I also know that there were people like my dad out there.
I'm just saying, generally speaking,
I don't think
he was controversial in his day. I think he was like, Paul, funny man, Paul Lynde.
Still, though, I like the idea of Cher and Paul Lynde on one hand, and, you know, Banjo Santas and Andy Griffith on the
true.
Other. And then they all gather in a living room, one of those fake living rooms, all white but decorated with red and green things.
Yes.
And a full cast of dancers who, by the way, have spent a lot of the episode dancing behind Cher in... quite an extravagant way.
Well, oh, and behind Glenn's rendition of Classical Gas, let's not forget, in very unisex outfits,
right.
You know.
This is bold.
Yeah, like black turtlenecks and vests and the girls in pants and the guys in Cuban heels. And,
yeah. You
know, it was, I said to Dave, it's getting to where you can't tell the boys from the girls anymore.
So, they get everybody gathered up, and all the dancers, all the backup singers, everybody, my TV family, says Glenn. They also include, no.
That's the second episode.
They have his wife.
His wife and children.
And his kids, his real kids. Who
second wife.
Cannot seem to sit still in front of the camera.
Yeah, they're fidgety.
And who are, you know, the coughing and like their finger in their nose. No such thing as a second take.
Oh, no.
From Television City in Hollywood.
Yeah, daddy's singing and the kid coughs.
Right. So,
it's funny.
Notable.
I posted a picture of the fake living room with the giant tree
right.
and the snow in the background
right.
on Instagram. And somebody said, and I said, I love a fake Christmas special living room. And somebody said, yeah, especially if you can't tell if they're inside or outside of
right.
the house.
Yeah. in the 1969 show, you see a black person among the assembled
TV family.
A woman.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. Everybody else, white, 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 white.
Like they just stepped off the new Christy Minstrels set or something.
Along comes 1970.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Glenn's hair is even longer.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Yes.
A good inch longer. Bigger sideburns. Sideburns,
yeah.
More of everything going on top of Glenn's head. We are given the guest stars who are not as cool as Cher or Paul Lynde.
No.
George Gobel and Shecky Green.
And
explain who those men were, please.
I'm not even entirely sure who George Gobel
was. A comic actor.
I remember always.
And a stand-up comic.
Yeah, I remember seeing, like, you'd see him on The Tonight Show, and he was on Hollywood Squares a lot. Weirdly enough, and my brain went to this place, both Paul Lynde and George Gobel were later involved with TV specials that had to do with a visit from St. Nicholas.
Yes.
There was a special, there's an animated special that I still love that it got downgraded from network TV to ABC Family, but it does always turn up during the 25 days of Christmas on ABC Family, called 'Twas the Night Before Christmas, where George Gobel is the voice of a clock-making mouse. Just watch it. It's really good. And then Paul Lynde did this special.
It's the one Christmas special I really don't like.
Yeah, but I love
it. Yeah.
It's Rankin Bass, animated. And then Paul Lynde did a special that aired one time, and I remember watching it as a kid, and it never aired again. I would love to see it because it's very bizarre. The premise of this show was that he was actually playing Clement Moore, the guy who wrote the poem A Visit from St. Nicholas. And I think Alice Ghostly was his wife. And it was all about, like, his irritating children and mother-in-law and all this stuff happening. And all of which conspired to inspire him to write the whole poem. It was the 70s. We'd watch anything.
Fascinating.
Yes. Anyway, so yeah, so George Gobel and then Shecky Green... Whose name has become a punchline in and of itself. Shecky Green was this, like, Vegas comedian, you know, the sort of rough comedian. His deal was, you know, that he was like, whoa, whoa, duh, kind of like the very, very cleaned up Andrew Dice Clay of his day.
Yeah.
Although, apparently, you know, he was one of those people where on TV it was one thing, but if you went and saw him in Vegas...
He worked blue,
especially right. Like at the 10 o'clock show.
Right.
I will always remember him from The Love Machine, where he plays the uncouth comedian that they give a TV show to. But yeah, so they're the guests for this for the 1970 show alongside a very, very young and dewy Anne Murray.
Yes.
And Jerry Reed.
Yes.
So, yeah.
And Mel Tillis.
Yeah. So there's a lot going on in this one.
They wanted to up the country.
Clearly.
Yeah. So, there is one really so terrible comedy sketch where George Gobel and Shecky Green are playing Laurel and Hardy.
Right.
Trying to decorate a tree. It is entirely silent. And it ends with them just throwing Christmas ornaments to the ground, smashing them one by one.
Yeah.
That's the comedy of that sketch. They cut over to Glenn, who is fake laughing, ha ha ha, ha mm-hmm. ha 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 ha. And you think, what?
Well, Glenn did a lot of fake laughing in the first episode, you recall, to that terrible filmed Western bit.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So he got a lot of that going on.
So... this man was being tormented himself and forced to, you know...
enjoy this crap show that was occasionally going on around
him. Terrible show.
It wasn't all terrible, but when it got bad, it was bad. Then once again, we're around the tree.
There's a sketch with George Gobel that's entirely in rhyming verse.
Oh, yeah. It's set in a greeting card shop.
In which the expression of the moment, you bet your sweet bippy, is brought up. And it finally dawned on me that I never knew what this meant. It was an expression that became popular on the Laugh-In show.
Right.
And took hold in the culture.
Yeah, like they even, when Rowan and Martin from Laugh-In made a movie, it was called The Maltese Bippy.
So I today looked up what was a bippy.
What is a bippy?
Ass.
Oh.
You bet your sweet ass.
I see.
You bet your sweet bippy. So they made a movie.
The Maltese Butt.
The Maltese Butt.
Kinder.
Yeah. You guys, the late 60s and early 70s didn't make any sense.
It's
then,
true.
Then they bring in Glenn's mother and father. And his sisters.
Right.
And the kids are back.
A year older, no less fidgety.
And the second wife is back.
Yes.
A beautician that he met in Carlsbad, New Mexico.
Right.
I don't know where she is today. I know some of the kids became part of his band as he got to be older.
If you've seen Glenn Campbell, I'll Be Me.
The documentary about
his last tour before... with his encroaching Alzheimer's, the last tour that he did when he could was still sort of able to perform.
Yeah,
some of the kids that were little babies on these shows are there with him performing and touring with him.
So that's the sad undercurrent here while you're watching these shows is knowing that, you know, 40 years down the road, this incredibly talented guy was going to get sick.
Yeah.
And where they just now, his family just now moved him into
full-time
skilled care. This just happened in 2014, and then they took him back out because they wanted him at home. And then just like in September, they put him back in.
I will say this. So many performers have the trajectory of kind of being forgotten or being taken for granted or becoming a punchline of one sort or another.
He never did.
There was a while there where I remember, like, in like the Ethan Green comics for a while, like he was dating a guy who was really into Glenn Campbell, and that was supposed to be kind of nerdy. You know, there was a period, I think, where Glenn Campbell wasn't cool. You know, he was a guy who'd had a TV show, and he was very 70s, you know. And then eventually, enough time passes, and your Burt Bacharachs and your ABBAs and everybody else becomes cool again.
Right.
And people rediscover how great they were in the
first place. I suppose that might have been the case.
So I think...
I was never around people who, for somebody like
Glenn Campbell, he could have easily gone to a trajectory where he was either just a joke or he was forgotten. And then, like, he could have very well... say, died without getting this appreciation. The one upside of the tragic occurrence of him having Alzheimer's is that knowing that this was coming and knowing that a situation that had already begun was only going to get worse, he had the opportunity to do that one last tour where he... It's in a way, it's like attending your own funeral. Like, everybody turned out to admire him and to love him and to appreciate his work. And, you know, like all the contemporary musicians came out to play with him and to do gigs with him and to perform with him and to sort of say how much of an influence he had been on them, you know? So, I mean, I think as sad as it is that he's had to suffer from this terrible disease, at least it was the impetus for him to have this opportunity to be appreciated for what he had accomplished.
Yeah. Kind of like when Charlie Louvin was out touring a few years back after he got hooked up with, was it Will Oldham, I think.
Yeah.
From the Louvin
Brothers.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen Glenn Campbell, I'll Be Me, by the way, I highly recommend
it. Yeah, you should totally.
It's a really great movie. But the highlight of the 1970 Christmas show
is
where we're back in front of the Christmas tree again with the TV family.
Yes.
Now we have two black people in the TV
family. Yes, now there's a black man joining the black woman.
Yes. And then there's the guy who I christened Leroy. This one guy, like the camera pans across and it's like, you know, there's Anne Murray and there's Jerry Reed, like people, dancers and singers, and then in the tree, and then sing people, and then space, and then this one guy sitting there
off on his own
with a look on his face like, I can't believe I have to be here for this stupid thing. Like, I don't know who this guy was. I don't know why he was sitting a good 10 feet at least away from everybody else, but there he is on camera. And then there's a wide shot and he's still over there by the side. And
he's one of the many white guys on stage We don't know if he's a backup singer. We don't know if he's a dancer. But he has the angriest face.
Like he's been given a timeout or something.
And he's separated from everybody else. And every time the camera comes to him, he will not smile. And it's not just that he's not smiling. It's that he looks furious.
And then he's visibly separated from everyone else. It's like if somebody took a family picture while like your 11-year-old nephew was having a tantrum and just like crossed his arms and like turned away from everybody else, but was still in the picture.
And he's the look on his face is always just sort of like, yeah, Wichita lineman, my ass, my biffy.
So, yeah, I mean, you should check out these specials because, you know, you get to see Glenn Campbell sing some of his hits. And
Christmas specials, and, yeah, of course, yeah,
it's great Christmas stuff. But, oh, man, keep your eye peeled for Leroy in the 1970 episode.
We don't know what his actual name is.
No, that's just my nickname
for
him.
You have decided.
But, oh, man, he was just killing me. So, again, Shout Factory just put that out in October, and it's a great little holiday treat, and, you know, it's a fun kind of thing to, you know, if you're the sort of person who likes to have Christmassy things on your TV, maybe even muted in the background at your party, there's enough sort of fun early 70s visual to it, too.
Jim Emailer.
Mm-hmm.
That's his last name. Oh. Emailer.
Emailer.
Yeah. Says, have you tried adjusting the screen ratio when watching shows on Logo and Cozy and Get TV? Because when I see 1.33:1 shows on those two channels,
1.33:1,
they display correctly with black bars on the sides. As I type this, Cozy is showing Dragnet and Logo is showing Bewitched, and both are displaying correctly. On the other hand, Lifetime is definitely chopping off the top and bottom of Frasier. On my TV, this is automatic, but I've noticed that when I watch TV at my mom's house, I need to adjust the screen when watching 133 programming on certain channels, despite the fact that we have the same cable carrier. Not all of the channels, and I don't know why, but I think it might have to do with whether the signal is HD or SD.
Hmm.
So,
well,
you can figure that out.
To answer your question,
someone's knocking.
We have hang on. Door. All right, let me pause. Let me pause. Hang on. To answer your question, yes, I have tried to do that. We have a Vizio, and there's a button on the remote that sort of allows you to pink around with the screen. And I've tried it while watching the Judy Garland show, and I can't make it, or Carol Burnett, one of those two, and I can't make it fit right. Now that could be that I'm pushing the wrong buttons and I haven't done it the right way. I will next time I have friends over who are more technically minded than I, which is most people, I will see if one of them can take a crack at it and make it work better. But I have given it a shot. I do know that it is something you can adjust, so I will keep attempting, but thank you for writing nonetheless.
Mr. Ross says, Simon and Simon had okay-looking guys for a Cop Bunny show. There is even some slash fiction out there for it.
Go!
My Cop Buddy show of the 80s was Riptide.
Is that Mark Harmon or?
Starring the handsome duo of Perry King and Joe Penny.
Perry King.
So 80s hot. How could I resist upon seeing a quick shot of them in their tidy whities in the opening credits? Plus, it had a very pink and rather phallic Sikorsky helicopter called the Screaming Mimi. What else is he saying here? Sorry, Dave. Pushing Daisies cannot come back as Lee Pace is needed to make more Halt and Catch Fire episodes. If you want to see fighting on TV, these are just little sentences that he's, you know.
Random thoughts.
Random thoughts from Matthew Ross. If you want to see fighting on TV, might I suggest The Ultimate Fighter and or Kingdom. Both are great shows about fighting.
We don't have DirecTV, so we don't get Kingdom. That's the one with Nick Jonas as the gay MMA fighter. It's a DirecTV show.
Okay. I will have to catch up on Master of None on your recommendation that it's like Louie, which I also like. I also agree with Alonzo on the Tim and Eric show as it gets on my nerves as well. And if you want to talk about blondes and Christmas, I will wager any Mandrell Sisters Christmas special against any of the other white bread shows you have. Where do we find them?
I was going to say, are those out on DVD, they better be. I would love to see the man draw Christmas shows.
Okay, next letter.
Ever tell you when I was in Nashville back in the 80s that there was near the Vanderbilt campus there was Barbara Mandrell 1 hour photo?
I just think that's really great. What? How many of those were there?
How many locations did Barbara Mandrell 1 hour photo have? I don't know, but I knew of at least one, and I regret that I never went in.
This is from Chuck. This is the last letter I'll read.
Okay.
As a loyal Linoleum Knife listener and a big fan of Brand Extension, I am digging LKTV. I like that you are discussing old stuff along with the new. Adam 12 finally makes sense. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Now, when it comes to the music, I was concerned about using Linoleum Knife's signature theme from Blue. Is this wise? Will loyal audiences be confused? Will the brand cannibalize itself? Did the Bionic Woman use the $6 Million Man's awesome music? Sadly, no. Which one is Gap? Which one is Old Navy? Is it Banana Republic? Can I buy Alonzo's book about movies if I'm listening to a TV podcast? Ack! You can see where I'm coming from. I worry about these things. The point is, and there is a point, Alonzo is right. His variations on TV are an ambitious enhancement of Blue's theme song and should reflect the infinite variety of culture television has provided us. This is a medium that has given us Alf and Roots, Sesame Street and Space 1999, The $6 Million Man, and The Bionic Woman. So yes, Alonzo is right. And I just made Dave say that out loud. Now it's time for us to go eat dinner with your family.
Please read the Andreoli letter.
It's too long. We're going to get to it next time.
Oh, all right, fine.
It's a very long letter.
I know, but he has great things to say about why I don't have to watch Mr. Robot.
I know.
All right, we'll save that for next time.
Yes.
All right, folks. Please tune in later this week. We will be posting our Linoleum Knife movie episode a little bit early because it's the holiday weekend. And just real quick, of course, the 10 episodes of Linoleum Knife Presents More Linoleum Knife are available until November 30th for the low, low price of $14.99. PayPal us at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. You can also PayPal us $20 for a signed and gift-wrapped copy of my book, Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas. Let us know where we're sending it and who to sign it to. And you can go to exileandguyvillebook.tumblr.com to pay what you want for Dave White's audiobook of Exile in Guyville. And
worth so much money.
Check out our friends on the internet that we tell you about every week. Have a lovely holiday.
Of Thanksgiving.
Yes.
So who's going to say goodbye?
Oh, that's right. Sorry, I forgot.
Yeah, that's an idea. Get it together.
Goodbye.